This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by our friends at Shutterstock.com. Sign up for an account now, and all new accounts can get 30% off any package by using the code FilmSack11 at checkout. That's FilmSack11, and all new accounts get 30% off any package. That's at Shutterstock.com.
Well, thank you, sir. Let me direct the matter to my daughter, the mind behind the Zydrate Support Network. Welcome ever to the stage.
Why, oh, why are my genetics such a bitch? This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. That's right, it's freaking Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 140. Welcome back to the show, everyone. I'm Scott Johnson, and joining me tonight, Brian, like a twisted version of Moulin Rouge Dunaway.
Look here, mister, I don't care if I haven't paid on my left or not in over 6 months. Possession is still 9/10 of the law. And oh, dear Lord, what are you doing? Surgery! Surgery! Last ride, I went with the easy joke. Good luck, you other guys.
Damn it, I wish
also
this show.
Had something about Minnie Pearl.
Oh, good. Well, perfect. I really wish this movie was streaming somewhere easily, more easily available for people, because that's a great reference. We'll get to that in a minute. Randy, Nose Drug Suckers Jordan.
Aloha, Brian. Scott, Brian. This week's film reminded me of how a hand near a bodice ripper prefers some coward beyond an alchemist. The interloper and I took a nefarious widow with a shine toward the clodhopper, another keg of beer, a few starlets, and a placid gypsy to arrive at a state of intimacy where we can hesitantly assimilate our cleavage. Some clock near the juncture takes a peek at a placid waif, and another rapacious gonad underhandedly writes a love letter to the fetishist, but what is understood doesn't need to be discussed.
Well, I am so glad I went with the easy joke.
Yep.
hold on. I'm looking some of these up.
Yeah, you need to do a little cross-reference. Finally, we have Brian, dead guy as a battering ram, Ibbot.
Who are you calling, Clodhopper? I guess in operas they sing every line, unlike in musicals, so that part is fine. But in this one, it seems like they're trying to scare us by making us listen to songs sung by Paris.
Well done, sir.
End scene.
Amazing.
Well, look at these roses people are throwing.
I'm so glad I am officially no longer the only person who has done that on Film Sack. I feel right? Way better. Bad reputation. You can share it.
Geez, now I can exactly emails to Scott Johnson.
Yeah. I'll field that for you. Fantastic work on that. I didn't know we were going to get such creative answers this morning. And people at home are going, what the hell are they talking about? What kind of weird-ass movie is this?
I don't know what I was talking about. I'm at home, though, so that makes sense.
I barely know, but Scott Fletcher knows, and he's here to clear it all up.
Repo, the genetic opera. In the near future, a biotech company saves mankind with synthetic replacements for failed organs. But those who default on their new liver or heart are subject to repossession. Shiloh, played by Alexa Vega, navigates this dystopia while searching for a cure for her rare illness. Her odyssey is set to a number of catchy songs in this tongue-in-cheek opera. Paris Hilton, Paul Sorvino, Anthony Head, and Sarah Brightman round out this deliciously diverse cast.
Mm. And Ogre.
Oh.
Let's not forget Ogre.
Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds?
Unfortunately, no. No.
I was about to say, oh.
We're talking about the actor who styles his name Ogre.
Who do you play, though?
The other brother. So there's
he
one brother.
Jim, was it Jim Carrey brother?
One of Sorvino's sons, it looks just like Mitt Romney. He's the other one.
Wait a minute.
The one with the stretched face on his
face. The ridiculous accent. Like, why do you have this accent? We're a family, right? Why would one person? Can you imagine? Like, okay,
it's Scott Johnson. I was the one born in Italy.
Right, I'm sorry. It's Scott Johnson's family. There are people with weird accents, but in most people's families,
yeah, but they're adopted, and we have an excuse. These were all birth children of Paul. Yeah, poor Paul Sorvino's birth. Paul
Sorvino, Academy Award winner, Paul Sorvino.
Right. Well, and he had like this Russian accent sometimes.
Yeah, he went back and forth, didn't he? He kind of had Princess Leia disease, where he would start talking one way and then, you know, different later.
Dunaway, you remember the band Skinny Puppy?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Vancouver industrial group, Skinny Puppy?
Yeah.
Skinny Puppies?
Yeah, sure. That's Ogre was one of the founding members of Skinny Puppy.
Oh, I was into Skinny Puppy. I should know that. Yeah. Look at you, Ibbit. Music man. What's going on over there?
I had no idea.
I
actually feel sorry for Brian Ibbit that we always like put so much music pressure on him.
It's like having a sports guy and say, what, you didn't know Randy, what's his face, from the Seattle Mariners batting average for... I can't even pull out a pseudo fake sounding.
Right. You just insert what's his name and you lose that fight.
Pretty much just.
Yeah, but I got a great David Bowie one coming up, and we'll see if you get this one right.
Is that
Johnson?
Randy
Johnson? Wasn't it Randy Johnson?
I don't know who the guy.
Randy Johnson did pitch for the Mariners for a while. Yeah.
Big mustache, looked like he just didn't belong on a.
They
big
called
unit.
Him big. Big unit, and since my name is Randy Jordan, Kurt Schilling always called me the big unit, which was just
that's true. He did do that.
A little too intimate with that's Kurt, funny. You know.
He used to call me big unit, but it had nothing to do with my name or my face.
Incidentally, bringing this back around, one of the bands that Ogre was in was named the Revolting Cox. I kid you not.
I remember them as well.
Do a cover of Do You Think I'm Sexy.
That was one of those bands you couldn't come home and talk to your mom about. You couldn't come home and go, hey, mom, guess what? I'm really into to the Revolting Cox, and later I'm going to pick up the new Butthole Surfers album. And, you know, those are the names you couldn't do. Even Violent Femmes in my house sounded a little rough. Yeah, for my mom, you know.
My parents were the most concerned about AC/DC of all things.
Yeah. Well, mine were too, because all the rumors about what their songs meant were pretty thick, you know? Like, it was as bad as Paul died.
They rose up to the level of people who were born in the 30s.
Yeah. Somehow. Which is ridiculous. Look at those guys. They're idiots. He's up there in a schoolboy uniform. What are you afraid of? Nothing.
Everything.
But they're probably, like, every person who's ever been in AC/DC is probably really a gentle guy. Yeah, you know, like...
Probably.
You don't get the idea that they're out to, like, hurt anyone.
Well, they're back in black. They hit
waiting
the
to get kicked in the waiting to get kicked in the nuts. Yeah,
that's right. Repo, the genetic opera, directed by Darren Lynn Bousman. He's the writer and also the director in this case. He is more famous for I'd say more famous for writing Saw 1, 2, and 3.
That we're doing this because we all got Blu-rays.
Mm. Oh yeah, we should thank Brad Lauzon, by the way. Lauzon. I'm not sure how you say your last name, but yes. Brad sent these to us forever ago.
Yeah, Brad sent us a bunch of copies of Repo on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
So we may have seen a slightly different version than you did. But anyway, I don't know if you guys all had the same experience as me. You put this this Blu-ray in, your PS3, and you have no choice but to sit and watch a Saw trailer. Like, it's for Saw 5, I want to say.
You can't skip it.
No, I couldn't skip it. Did you just leave the room or something?
I had to do the digital thing, and so I didn't.
Oh right,
I didn't
right.
get to see this, but I hate when you can't skip.
Use the instead of using the chapter forward, use the high speed and
gun
it up
to
60, and you get through it in 5 seconds.
I didn't think of that. Well, I watched the whole trailer.
Cheater! Oh.
And I'm here to tell you, I want to now watch Saw 5.
Well, it worked on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen two of the Saw movies, and that was bad enough for me at the time. I saw the one with Marky Mark's brother, Donnie Wahlberg, in it. Yeah,
I've now seen Repo: The Genetic Opera, and Saw can't be worse.
Mm. Oh, come on! Okay, me and Randy Grant to disagree on this one.
Oh, now before you guys have a disagreement, I want to say something that I'm really genuinely concerned about with this movie. I think that this is one of those movies that we may not have known it going into, but one of those movies that is very divisive, and any comments on one camp that we liked it are going to get just jeered by people who think it's absolute garbage, and we're going to get crazy fan rage from anyone who disagrees with it being bad or not. Like, if we say it's bad, we're going to take all kinds of heat. It is the hot American summer of musicals.
I was going to go there. Yeah. So we're on the same page there.
Right. I think before we really get started, we haven't watched, is this our first musical?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Haven't watched The Sound of Music together?
Hold on. We did do Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which has got a lot of songs. It's more of a actual musical where lots of dialogue interspersed with music. This is truly more of an opera. It's, you know, singing all the time, like Ibbot's intro. It's basically that from top to bottom, beginning to end.
I think we need a couple of ground rules here first. Okay, there's different taste throughout, usually for musicals, and especially when it comes to any type of rock musicals or anything like that. Okay, let's go around real quick. Rocky Horror Picture Show, I thought was, I'm okay with. What do you guys think?
I'm also okay
with it.
Yeah. No, I like the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I love the soundtrack to that.
Right.
But I don't think any
of us are going to like have some huge love for that or Grease or whatever. The real dividers are like Baz Luhrmann films.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. What do you think about Sweeney Todd?
I didn't see it.
I thought Sweeney Todd was fine. I mean, look at Little Shop of Horrors is a great example. The remake,
So what we're really talking about here is the concept of a stage musical that's then made into a film.
Yeah.
And this is like the same thing, only they skipped the stage musical, you know, larval stage.
But it did.
They just went straight to film.
But they used to be a stage play is the thing. And this thing ran in L.A. Oh, yeah.
As a promotion, yeah. Right.
Yeah, well, no. Before that, even. It was just a thing to do. And the guy really liked it and decided he needs to push this out, help with the screenplay, and make a movie out of it. This, according to Wikipedia, so again, take that source for whatever credence you give to it, give it. But my whole thing is, I think there's just a very distinct difference between this and a traditional musical, because you could call just about any Disney animated film a musical. You could call Nightmare Before Christmas a musical if you wanted.
You could call The Sound of Music a musical, and it's not.
Right.
It's a movie where people break out into song about seven times.
Right, and I think that is whatever that is called, if that's called a musical or something else, that is different than this. Mm-hmm. This is a, mm-hmm. we only communicate through music. And so it ends up feeling like a weird, do you guys remember... Oh, this is going to, I don't know, I don't even know what I'm thinking of here, but there was an old kid show. It may even have been an episode of
Captain Kangaroo?
Mr. Rogers. No, where on Mr. Rogers, they took an entire episode where everything was sung. So Mr. McFeely would come over, and it wouldn't just, again, not just Fred Rogers occasionally breaking in a song about putting socks on or whatever. It would be like, oh, it's time to open the door and freaking let what's his name in. And the other guy would, all the dialogue is sung.
Are you thinking of Pee Wee Herman?
No.
All right.
No, because Pee Wee Herman, again, had dialogue. It had talking and stuff. This is just wall-to-wall music. The only time you ever get a word out of anybody is if they yell it. Like this intro here, it's the only part you get Paul Sorvino talking is right here.
Well, thank you, sir. Let me direct.
Okay, well, thank you, sir, is about the only piece of non-sung dialogue he did in the entire movie.
And so it's very stage show.
Really weird. Yeah, very stage show. That's, I guess, back to your point. It's like something you'd see on a stage. And I think that's what they wanted to do, but then they also wanted to like make it really gross and, you know, I guess, you
shocking.
Know, I guess shocking. It's not really shocking.
Really
though.
Gross.
It's gross, I think but they not really. Is it really that gross?
No, I mean I don't think so.
Really,
because they make most of the mutilations are done like almost.
Are we so jaded that cutting someone open and pulling a bunch of organs out of their body is not grossing us out anymore?
Pretty much.
No. I'm not too jaded for that. I'm too jaded for when it looks real fake.
Yeah, right.
It's really? Like asking, you thought it looked fake.
This is stage gore, right? I mean, this is...
Stage gore.
Stage gore.
Stage gore.
He warned us about the rising temperatures.
2000, gore. 2000 presidential hopeful
helped
stage gore
helped invent the internet.
right. But there's a Halloween quality to the gore,
right?
That just feels like jelly and goo, and it didn't feel like people really getting cut up and stuff. And there's a few kind of overtly violent moments, but anytime anybody's gut was sort of flayed open, I just kind of go.
The whole movie is overtly violent. What are you talking about?
Well, you know what I mean. It's not
the whole movie. At any time, someone is liable to just murder the next guy.
Right. It's yes, absolutely. But I'm just saying the 300/ Sin City style digital shot on digital video style of everything.
Right.
Didn't feel real to me.
Okay. Now this film is after all of those others that we're going to name, right? Like it's after Moulin Rouge, it's after 300, it's after Sin City, right?
2008, yeah.
So why isn't it better?
Well, because Moulin Rouge had the sense to actually have people talk here and there. Also, Baz Luhrmann is way better at this stuff. I mean, I could go on. There's better actors in it. There's a better story in it. It's more appropriate to the place and time of Moulin Rouge. Like, there's just so many. I'd love. So we were all asking, like, Brian, you asked if we're okay with these things, or, you know, how we felt about Rocky Horror. Moulin Rouge stands as one of my favorite musicals ever. It's also one of my favorite movies. Maybe not my top 10, but it's up there. And yeah, it's up there
kind of amazing the first time you see it and you find out Ewan McGregor can sing.
Yeah, all that stuff is crazy. And just there's a beat to it, but there's also this constant barrage of nostalgia for songs that you have either liked or know about for so many decades. And when you hear him get up on that elephant and do that big montage of like 50 mm-hmm. songs, you know, both modern and old, you're like, oh my gosh, this is maybe the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Right. And so
I'm a sucker for that.
Right. Right.
Now so this thing,
you're a mainstream whore. I got you.
This thing was constantly shrouded in James Cameron blue light. So that was one thing that was real fun. But the other thing was that all the music sounded like one big, the whole movie felt like a long extended Evanescence video.
Yes,
with the glow effect, it was so the soft camera effect or filter was just ridiculous.
Yeah. Plus the fact that there were six girls who all looked like Amy Ray or Amy. Amy Lee.
I had to keep looking out the window to see reality and how reality is sharp and has different colors and so on. I was really bothered by the filter on
the costume. I read $8 million was your budget. Right. It definitely felt like a lower budget film, and all shot on video or digital, which isn't a problem. It's just that there was a thing between, well, let's say 2004 and 2009 where this stuff became kind of in vogue. 300 was a thing and Sin City was a thing, and making stuff kind of look like a video game in a weird way was kind of a hot thing to do.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But the music is what mainly put it for me in kind of the mid-aughts feel of, you know, that weird gothic bad heavy metal thing that was going on, the mm-hmm. Evanescence thing. And I know there's some people out there that really like that. And on Twitter already, this is the reason I think this is going to be so divisive. All I did was put up a comment on Twitter. I think it was, this movie's like a long Evanescence video, which isn't offensive in either direction.
Right, right. It's not saying good or bad. Yeah.
But people piled on me. People going, well, you're an idiot.
Oh, God, like, really?
Whoa, I'm an idiot. Hello. I love everything you do, but you're wrong. You know, this kind of conversation.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but I'm just warning you guys, we're in for it. If no matter where we land on some of this stuff.
Well, as long as people don't get mad at me for liking it, I thought it was actually pretty darn well done.
I just like to say to my good friend Brian Dunaway, there's no way I could be mad at you for liking this film. I'm not saying that I hated this film as much as some we've seen. In fact, I want to put this out there, and I'm interested if you guys agree. The film gets better as it goes, and I can't figure out whether it's because they got better at making the movie as they went or because I got used to something that I started out hating.
I think the story got better as it went along. I think you started really feeling for the characters after a while, and I didn't really have anything for the characters at first. And
I only felt like I was enjoying it when I'm not kidding about this, when the grave robber guy would come on.
He was fantastic.
He was great.
He was really good. Yeah,
he was great, and he's, you know, the Jiminy Cricket of this story.
He's the Jiminy.
Well, you know what I mean.
Greek, he's the Greek chorus.
Thank you. The guy. Right. The thing that you get in these kind of movies that tells the tale, right. And it's all kind of through his eyes. And walk with me now, won't
he's
you?
He's the one that breaks the fourth wall and is able to address the audience and say, "Everyone's going to an opera tonight."
And he was great. He had a great voice. That stuff was just really cool on the fidelity side of things, mm-hmm. and it just. I would really get into when he would do things. And then I would go, oh, okay, I'm supposed to be enjoying this on a level of like, this is a stage show. Like Randy said, this is a thing I would be watching on stage. Very enjoyable. You're in a group. There's fake smoke everywhere. Weird lighting. This is fun. It's when Paul Sorvino, respected character actor, Paul Sorvino gets out there in what I believe is the most miscast role he's ever been put in. It's not even that he can't sing, because he can, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, there are parts of this where he's got a very good Pavarotti, not Pavarotti-esque, but I mean like a very good deep moving booming voice.
Oh yeah, he would get the
yeah exactly
going on, which is great. Boy, did you hear that? That kind of hurt, actually.
Yeah,
that was, yeah, you need to, no, you need to hold on to that.
but part of me was dying. I was like, no, you're going to figure out who committed the crime and then pass it off to the guys over the law side of it so they can, we can have Law and Order all up in here. Like, you shouldn't be doing this. This is weird for him.
You ran off from the grave robber guy?
Yeah.
And I just want to ask, did anyone else pick up the Richmond from IT Crowd vibe off that guy?
What's anybody? His face? He's the guy. No. So yeah, for those not familiar with the IT Crowd, it's the guy that's in the server room.
In the closet.
They won't let him out.
Richmond.
Yeah. And he, for sure. I mean, it was
all right. The whole movie, every time I saw him, I was thinking of Richmond.
But he was the most theatrical, too. He had the white face makeup and the.
Yeah.
Like when he was on and he was doing his thing and he was talking to us, I was like, yep. This is something I would have paid, you know, $20 and taken the wife down to the whatever theater, and we'd see it on a Saturday night, and after we might get a picture with somebody. And they had me when he was on. But everybody else, okay. I wasn't buying it. And you know what? I'm not even going to say this. I'm not even going to say that like Paris Hilton was a bad choice. I think she was as good as any of them. I don't. She wasn't bad. She was fine.
Yeah,
hey, I knew that was wrong. She did her part.
I am going to say this is Paris Hilton's best performance in a film.
Well, that may be true.
Especially when her face was off. That was the best part. I'm going to say that Alexa Vega was awesome. Shiloh, I think the relationship between her and Anthony Head Nathan, that's the thing I was watching for. I noticed the Paul Sorvino thing, but I was really watching their interaction, and I was really hung up into that.
She has a very, and I'm trying to think, and maybe it's because of the musical connection, but I'm thinking of the Beatles Across the Universe movie.
Right.
And she definitely has a very Rachel Evan Wood kind of feel to her, Alexa Vega does.
Mm. Mm. She's a spy kid, for those who don't know. She was the sister in those terrible movies. Spy Kids.
In those terrible movies.
I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of those. Yeah. She's in the new Machete. She's got some other cool stuff under her belt, but
Robert Rodriguez is like an auteur who doesn't know how to use his own powers.
Whatever. I could watch Desperado 50 times in a row and feel good about it. I love that movie. If you guys haven't seen Desperado, quit wasting your time with us. Go watch it.
Good movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But whatever. She's fine. She's great. Anthony Head's fine. I really liked it when he was in the role of the repo man.
Yes, right. When he's suiting up and kind of getting darker and darker. And, you know, you're seeing this nice dad turn into hired killer, or, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. And the brothers cracked me up. I don't think they were any good, but they cracked me
up. There's a movie trope there, by the way.
Oh, there's a million, but we'll start with that one.
Brian just brought up the blackmail will make you do anything outside of character. You know, movies depend on this. The minute somebody has something to hold over you, suddenly you're an evil killer, or you're willing to rip people's organs out of their bodies or whatever. I get a little tired of that.
Well, but it's a method that a movie can do to add depth to that character. Like if you have a character and he does everything that you expect him to do and he, you know, acts the way you expect him to act, then it's really boring. But you want something that is going to turn, that's going to surprise you about the character. Wow, okay, I didn't think he'd go that direction, or I didn't think that would be a catalyst enough to turn him around.
Yeah. It'd be very hard to have any sympathy for him as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At all.
That dude, the angry older brother that was always yelling and killing people for no reason.
The two brothers were so irritating.
They were pretty irritating. But that guy, he made me laugh because he could not sing to save his life.
That was probably the most irritating thing. But you're casting for an opera. Come on. You know, this guy had to do an audition. That was the thing that kind of took me a little bit out of the movie. I'm actually going to go on record and say I kind of enjoyed this. I give it like a... You know, like a B- if I had to give it a letter grade.
That's kind of about where I am. A lot of people online think I'm going to hate it. I didn't hate it. I kind of didn't get bored. I kind of had fun. I thought some of the music was actually awesome. Mm-hmm. I thought some of it was real bad. But on the whole, if you just kind of took it all for what it was, you know, and also getting into that stage play mentality, that helps a lot. And it's kind of fun. You kind of enjoy the ride.
My thinking is about not on the whole. Taken in pieces, I like this film a lot more than the whole. Like as a soundtrack, as a score, as a CD to listen to, I'm cool.
You're down with that?
It's, you know, like rock opera has this long and storied history with, that involves amazing artists like The Who and Pink Floyd, and like I'm down. These guys kind of got to a level that is required to call something a rock opera. I just didn't think the film as a whole was all that good.
Yeah, it wasn't even. I still think Sorvino's the wrong guy. That's my biggest problem. He didn't. I can't take him. I can't take him as that kind of bad guy. I take him as a hitman bad guy.
What if that had been Gene Simmons?
Then I would have probably been surprised he could hit those notes. But yeah.
But wouldn't it have been awesome?
Oh hell yeah, it would have been Gene Simmons. I'd be saying that's different things because he's menacing. Paul Sorvino looks like he's one of two things. He's either an unassuming Italian hitman in a mob movie, or he's a grandpa guy that I would sit on his lap and tell me stories.
Right,
you know,
right? Yeah. He's got such a unique look to him too.
He does.
And in real life, he's got a ridiculous number of adopted grandchildren. I don't know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't either. But his daughter, I used to have a serious thing for his daughter.
Oh yeah, she was hot.
Hot. We need to watch The Replacement Killers. I'm just throwing that out there.
That's your Mira Sorvino film?
That's one I really like.
What was the one with the Aphrodite, Mighty Aphrodite?
I don't remember it. What's she doing that?
Can we watch Mighty Aphrodite?
Did that one have some crystal method music and Danny Trejo shooting at stuff?
It's a Woody Allen talkie piece.
Then I'm out.
Was she in Mimic? Or no, that was somebody else, right?
No deal. No, that was her Mimic. Oh, we do have Mimic coming up. Yeah, her in Mimic. That's her.
Okay.
We've got
Mimic coming up. Other Mira Sorvino films that are streaming. Free Money with Charlie Sheen.
And Michelle.
Free Money with Charlie Sheen and Thomas Hayden Church. We need to consider that.
All right. Huh. Is that comedy? What is that?
Lulu on the Bridge with Harvey Keitel and Willem Dafoe. We need to consider that.
Yeah, that's not bad.
No, that's about it.
That's about it. And don't forget Replacement Killers. Let's get that in there.
It's not streaming.
It needs to be. It's fantastic. Chun Yao Fat tearing it up. Michael Rooker in the role of a good guy for once. Ah, oh, it's great. So good. Anyway.
Okay.
A couple of bits of trivia here. It was originally a stage play located in L.A. and New York City. Director Darren Lynn Bousman also directed a version of the play in 2001. There were a total of 58 songs in the film, including the instrumentals. So quite the soundtrack. And it would have to be. Yeah, it was 2 hours of singing.
The Wikipedia article for this movie has two lists of songs. They weren't content with just listing all the songs in the film. They listed all the songs in the film. Then they listed all the songs on the soundtrack as though that's somehow important to differentiate.
Yep. True that. Looked like filmed on a Mark III Canon, as far as I could tell, except the flashback sequences were shot on 60mm film, which is weird. Yeah, so there's a little bit of trivia for you. Did I see Pat Benatar in this movie, or was I smoking crack?
You were smoking crack. I didn't.
That girl looked like Pat Benatar, dude.
Which girl?
The one on the guitar in the scene where she's rebelling against her dad and flipping out with her side boob.
Yeah, the wall opens up, and all of a sudden she's a...
Yes.
She's got a band backing her up.
Yeah, and the band back there, I'm telling you, when they kept flashing to that guitar, so they would longingly look at her. Or Joan Jett, that's who I mean. That's who I mean.
I think it's in the trivia somewhere. I think they mentioned that Joan Jett had made a cameo or something.
I saw Joan Jett's name in the credits on IMDb.
Dude, I do Pat Benatar and Joan Jett mix-ups all the freaking time. I don't know why. I don't know what my problem is. Mm. Also, Paul Sorvino could...
Or both more manly than you.
I know I said...
Wow.
That's true.
Oh, wow.
I know I said that Sorvino's a bad choice, but if you're going to have him, at least don't make him wear pants up to his nipples. That's all. You know, because I can't take that seriously.
It's a particular look. Mm. It's a Mad Men look. Like... It doesn't bother me so much.
It was all... I know there's a steampunk aesthetic. There's, you know, sci-fi mashed with old school looking. It's like the 20s and sci-fi had a baby in a weird way. And I get it. It's fine. I just think if you're going to have... If you want me to take your main henchman bad guy real seriously, don't have him wear his pants up to his neck and don't make it Paul Sorvino.
Right. You know, and we've talked about all this stuff and not once have we mentioned the crazy idea that is... organ surgery that can be possessed.
The whole premise, right?
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
I am shocked. That's not like on the top of the list of I just can't swallow that pill.
Oh, and that actually made me want to ask you guys the question. So there's a way they kind of set all that up, or they explain what GenCo is and how...
GeneCo.
GeneCo, sorry.
Right, got to get it right now.
I thought it was GenCo.
Like you'll get the hate mail.
You sure it's GeneCo?
They sing
GenCo.
GenCo. Right.
All right, exactly. So fair enough. So it's GenCo, and they set it up early in the film for what it is, which is this breakthrough company that figures out a way to harvest organs real quick and pop them into other people. But the big deal is to make it the cheap so everyone can afford it. You sign away any rights you have to those organs if you can't make your payments. So the guy comes in, literally hangs you up, tears into your guts, pulls your organ out, and then gives it to somebody else and kills you in the process. That's kind of the way that whole thing's set up. But they tell it in this comic book motif.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Did everyone say, I actually really liked that. I thought that was fitting for the look of the movie.
Right. I did too, except if I looked away for half a second and right. suddenly I realized that, oh, they started one of the comic motifs. Oh, crap.
Rewind. Well, right. Yeah. You can't look away from those. So much backstory is told that you, you miss important key elements. The film makes no sense if you miss it.
Yeah. So you kind of had to watch those to get it, but I like those. I like those in a lot of movies, but it wasn't just like kind of like a comic book. No, that was a damn comic book.
Oh yeah.
Actually, that's where I want to ask you guys a question that's kind of been brewing in the back of my mind for a while now. Are we a different generation than any that's come before us with movies in that we sit and watch films at home, A, and B, with the iPad hanging around and you don't spend 100% of the film focusing on the movie?
Yeah, we actually had a conversation about this on Thanksgiving because I don't know what brought it up, but my uncle is a staunch supporter of, no, when you watch a film, you do it like you're in the theater. You give 100% of your attention to it. No laptop on your lap.
You're not trying hard enough, Ibbot.
Right, exactly. No, you know, iPad, no looking stuff up. And I'm like, I don't know. I think when you're at home, it's a lot easier to be able to pull it up and say, oh, who is that actor? I know I've seen him in something, and pull it up while you're watching the show.
I miss 90% of the important information in movies because I'm looking up somebody's thing. I'm like, who is that person?
That's a really interesting mm-hmm. observation and conversation because mm-hmm. it has changed, right? I mean, it's not the same. I don't know if it ever really, like at home, maybe it's always been a problem. In the theater, I still go and I'm super focused. Because everyone's got to turn their phones off.
I never ran and got my Encyclopedia Britannica out or nothing and tried to research while I was
watching. Right. Exactly. Yeah. When you had the old VHS tapes, it's like you didn't have this much information that you could use along with the movie. And now, you know, you buy a movie like The Avengers or Prometheus, and they come with an app that audibly tracks where you're at in the movie and bring up information about the movie while you're watching it on your iPad.
Yeah, but to me, I see it more like this. If it's a movie I've not seen once at least, mm-hmm. or not a film sack movie sometimes, because that's different. If it's like that, let's say I was seeing The Avengers for the first time on a 50-inch TV in a living room with friends,
sure.
I'd be focused as hell. I wouldn't turn away to look at anything. It's my second and third viewings, kind of like special features, where I start digging out my phone and looking crap up. I do that way more once I've seen it.
But you're talking about a film that was made in 2011 and put out in 2012. Like, I'm saying that maybe filmmakers are taking this into account.
Oh,
you know, like maybe movies don't depend on you hitting 100% focus like they used to.
Well, maybe if they figure it out and they're smart enough, they'll be like, well, not only are they're going to go buy this Blu-ray, they're going to watch this thing either for the first time or again, but they're going to pull up IMDb and they're going to look up some stuff. And while they're there, there is an ad running for this other Joss Whedon movie. And a certain percentage of those people are going to go, ooh, and click it and buy that damn thing. Like there's all this, like, you know, algorithmic money-making possibilities for,
I don't know if they're doing it yet though.
Well, I'm not saying they're good at it yet, but I think there is definitely an effort there. They have to harness that because that's where our eyeballs are. So if I'm going to be glancing away from Repo, the genetic opera, for a minute, they've got to figure out another way to keep me in the space, right? Whether it's watching the movie or something connected to it, I think there's no question that at the very least the data from that contributes to some meaningful way of getting more money out of people. And I don't mean that in a nefarious, overmarketed way. I mean, that's just the way of thing. That's the way the business is going to have to go because we have too many other things to watch. But kids don't watch TV. They watch YouTube. So,
yeah,
you know.
You say that, but kids definitely watch TV.
Mine don't. We don't have TV.
Well, See, that's because you've taken it out. I mean,
yeah, but it wasn't like I'm taking no more TV. It wasn't like that. I didn't put my fist down and say no more TV, everybody. It was
It was Tristan,
we're gonna go. We're bravely into this new world of Hulu, Netflix, and YouTube, and let's go kind of thing.
Tristan's a good example of I think an average kid. I mean, he'll spend, you know, the stuff that he consumes visually like that, I'd say it's probably about 50% YouTube, 50% TV. He'll go up there and he'll watch two or three episodes of Adventure Time right in a row, and then come down to the to his computer, pop up a browser, and watch an Eminem video on YouTube. I mean, I think it's
you're right. It's mixed. How they consume it is dead, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, it wouldn't be that weird for a kid today to be watching. Let's say I'm just trying to think of an example, but let's say you're watching this movie, and there happens to be an iOS app that came out along with the movie, and they mm-hmm. want people to play that app. And it's some free-to-play thing. And you could foresee a day where whatever you're watching on a screen is simultaneously feeding you some other interactive experience that either jives with what you're watching or not. But there's some
It's happening now. The Avengers iPad app somehow is able to hear what part of the movie is on.
Voodoo and magic.
It's able to, I don't know if it's able to hear what's going on in the movie, or I haven't tried these out yet, but they're, you know, when I launched it, it said such and such audio sync is a feature or is a copyright of such and such. I'm thinking, really, this thing knows what part of the movie I'm in based on sounds.
I'd like to see Ibbot investigating that right now. Covering the microphone up on the iPad.
I would totally taping up
the camera just in case.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's an interesting conversation about where things are and where they're headed. But with Film Sack movies, we have a movie to do next week where I have a lot to say about when I'm bored and when I'm not. Mm-hmm. This movie kind of
when you're bored.
Yeah, yes. I mean, you'll hear about it next week. But there's I'll put it this way. Next week's movie, the first half was boring as hell. That's all I'll say. And as a result, I was distracted while I watched it.
Okay, I'm going to watch next week's movie in halves.
Yeah, do that.
I'm going to watch the first half.
Better that
way. I'd watch it in quarters. Sorry, look at the time. There's 2.5 hours almost.
There's the Golden Girl half, and then there's the other half. And
the Golden Girls? Holy crap.
You'll know where it is.
Oh, my gosh.
You'll see it.
We're watching a Golden Girls movie next week.
In a way, you are. Anyway, back to this just a little bit. I swear they use the same stabbing and blood sound effects in every stabbing or death.
I felt like if there had been a Wilhelm scream in this movie, it would have been used a dozen times.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, they were really into that. So anytime anybody got like stabbed in the heart, it would make this wet, you know, Foley sound. Yeah. And then they used it every time somebody died. And you guys, people died all the time in this movie.
This movie was really a series of corpses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey guys, just breaking in to give another thanks to our friends at Shutterstock.com sponsoring the program this week. Love these guys. They are really, really cool. The best part about them, as far as I'm concerned, is the time they took to sit down with me and talk to me about how their service worked. That's kind of a rare thing these days. They were that interested in making sure you guys understood where they're coming from. You'll find perfect image and video stuff for your next creative project. If you're like me, do a lot of artwork and layout and graphic design and stuff for people, you need a good website where you can pull that sort of stuff down easily and quickly. Their search engine is amazing. It's all sort of predictive search. And by searching for certain current words, the way Google works right now, where it kind of populates the results as you type, imagine that, but with all visual imagery and visual return data like photos and vector images and other graphics. This stuff comes up immediately. You know exactly what you want, and you can pull it right out. It really gives you all the assets you need to take your projects, all your creative projects, to the next level. And they make it really, really easy. You'll find all the assets you're looking for, and you can save them in the Lightbox Gallery, which is really a great place. You can sort of access them and show them to people in real time, as a presentation to your other team members or prospective clients and that sort of thing. It's a complete offering, and they use real photographers for their photo work, and they vet everything that comes through. Here's the best part. You can try Shutterstock today. By totally free, just check it out. Free account, no credit card needed. Just start an account, begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be like. Save the assets you find to your new light box and so on. Once you decide to purchase, use this code, FilmSack11, And all new accounts will be 30% off. That's any package, too. We've got multiple packages. Something will work for just about anybody. I know I found one that works perfect for me. That's 30% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com. And don't forget the code FilmSack11. That'll save you 30% on all new accounts. We thank Shutterstock for their support of FilmSack. Thanks, guys.
I didn't like that.
I didn't like people. Look, I'm no prude. You can drop the F-bomb in front of me, except on the show because we have a clean tag. But you can drop it in front of me and I don't even care. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't even flinch me. I there's something about it being sung in an opera, though, that throws me off. Because you're taking this relatively ancient or classical art form, and you're just, I don't know, there was something about they're walking around going, F-a-D-F, F-and-F, and just the way they would sing right. It.
And it only rhymes with words like sock and muck and duck.
And no one's got like, a truck, so you're already off one. You can't use that one. So, yeah, well, just an odd little observation. Anything else that you guys want to make sure we mentioned about this film before
I could have swore there was a one song that had to be ripped off from Pocahontas that sounded like... Do you know what I'm talking about? There was one song where he was singing about his daughter.
Yeah. This is why it's hard to
about
do a,
Shiloh.
It's hard to do a true musical on FilmSack because I've only watched the movie once, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they had a few songs like that where they just felt like classic Disney songs. And then they had others where it was that weird goth metal that the early 2000s was so into. Whatever happened to that, by the way? Is that still a thing? Can you go out and get an Evanescence? Sure.
Marilyn Manson took it and hit it.
I guess.
He said, this is no.
But, you know, and there are other bands, and I can't think of them, but maybe Ibbot knows, but there was a whole series of, like, groups that just all sounded like that. And I don't know what happened to that style.
It was an area that I got into, but, I mean, I was aware of Evanescence, picked up a couple Evanescence songs, but trying to think of a good example of another band like that.
But it was right around the same time, right? It's when, like, Daredevil came out and...
Right.
And, I'm trying to think of other movies that may have used this, but it was like the dubstep of 03.
Dresden Dolls, maybe, or maybe. Good Charlotte? Would they fall into that? Not really. Or Rock. Yeah.
There's another one that I can't think of that all the kids in the neighborhood were into at the time. And now nobody talks about it. Just kind of went away. Hmm. It's like grunge, but faster. I don't know. Although I'm back into grunge now, big time.
Anyway, me too.
Yeah.
A new Soundgarden album.
A new Soundgarden album put me over the top. It's just so good and so like true to their sound that it just messed me up. So now I'm just buying old Foo Fighters and getting old stuff from Alice in Chains and just
wearing some flannel.
Yeah. Screaming trees. Love it.
I tried to buy some flannel today. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Referred to the bed that my pet sleeps in as the temple of the dog.
Oh. That's such a good album. Oh my gosh. Anyway.
I'm going hungry.
So good, dude. That was a great CD. I freaking ate that thing up.
Oh my god.
Two-part harmony it's from the Bryans.
20 right? years old, Scott. 20 years.
I know, but it's time for a comeback. It's time
20 for, years. When Temple of the Dog came out, Led Zeppelin 1 was that old.
Yeah. Think about this.
Think about that.
In 2014, what's his name? Jeez, Nirvana singer Kurt Cobain will have been dead 20 years in 2014. Think about that.
Courtney Hole.
Think about that. Oh, yeah, blame Courtney Hole. You blame her for that,
I still hate her name.
Courtney Hole.
Well,
it's Courtney Love.
It's Courtney Love. But
she sang for Hole.
Yeah, she's always for Hole.
So. Always call her Courtney Hole.
Of course. You're supposed to. It's required by law. All right, let's get to some clips here. Got a bunch actually, and these are all singing ones, as you can imagine, because that's all.
Really, you got some singing clips in this one.
Imagine that.
How weird.
I got a bunch of them too. So here is some early example of the dude singing. I forget who this is.
Out from the night, from the mist, steps the figure. No one really knows his name for sure. He stands at 6'6", head and shoulders. Gray, he never comes knocking at your door.
It's very Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah.
That was the Grave Robber.
Jack Skellington kind of stuff going on there. Here's another dude singing some more.
Say that you once bought a heart or new corneas, but somehow never managed to square away your debts. He won't bother to write or to phone you. He'll just rip the still-beating heart from your chest!
So very, yeah. It's they tell the story.
A little worried, Scott. A little worried.
I like that, Scott.
These are my favorite. These are my favorite moments. And then Paul Sorvino walked in and did this.
Maggots, vermin. You want the world for nothing. Commence your groveling. Rotti, your king is dying. Even Rotti Largo cannot prevent this passing. Who will inherit Gene Cole or keep those vultures guessing?
I actually liked that until he got less Russian. I liked it when he was Russian.
Right. Was he supposed to be Russian or Italian?
It was something like that. They flopped around.
Yeah, they did. I guess it had a very Russian. I mean, the whole thing had a Russian feel to it with the lettering and the
right.
You know, the
there was
industrial.
An even more. Mm-hmm. There was an even more, and this is very tropey. Chinese
tropey,
feel
man.
To things.
Chinese, I got kind of an Asian vibe throughout, but kind of a not comical, but it was pretty exaggerated.
Right, that's
like,
what I'm saying.
Yeah, like everything was made out of kimono material.
It's just weird to me how anytime you make a movie, you got to take the current feared bad guys and put them in the future.
Yeah.
Well, they're the ones who will control the future, right?
Right. Exactly. If it's not the Russians, who will it be?
The Chinese. Well, you know, 20 years ago, it was Japanese.
Yeah. Right? Now it's the Chinese. Soon
buying up all Hawaii. We're scared.
Going to be the Africans. You guys know my theory, right? Is how it's going to go. So America made its own stuff. I always get in trouble for this, but I'm going to say it anyway. America made its own stuff. Then they found out, we don't want to do that anymore. We want to make it cheaper. So they send it to, at the time, Japan. And Japan made it real cheap and made it pretty good, but they got better at it. Got so good at it that in a post-World War II world, they eventually got too expensive to make the stuff there. So now everybody sends it to Taiwan. Same sort of thing happens, even though Taiwan still does a bunch of that. They send it to China because China's making stuff super cheap. There will come a day, and that's where we are now, where that's not cheap enough. Or it's going to cost us too much. And we're skipping right over Korea because they got too good too fast. Too much StarCraft. I don't know what happened there. But we're not even going to bother with it. Samsung's already good, but nothing's cheap anymore. So next place, dude, I'm telling you, it's either
Canada.
I don't think it's going to be South America. Scott. I think it's going to be Africa. Africa is going to be the new country where all the shite is made. And then when
Africa.
They're done with it.
I don't know because you have to have a – it all has to do with how much – the it's really just, cost of living and
yeah
there's
exactly.
a lot of issues in
yeah
in,
but it's
in,
low in Africa as a continent.
I want to point out to Scott that Africa is not a country.
No, I know. Nice. No, I know there's many countries there, but continentally speaking there are huge swaths of Africa where stuff could be made real cheap,
and
they've
then
got,
once Africa catches up with the rest of the world, it's going to go to Antarctica.
Yeah, and after all the penguins die, then we're screwed.
It's coming all back to America.
Then we got to go to space. All right. This one I like to call Lest It Be You.
Lest it be you on the concrete below.
No.
Below.
And the best part is now I have this forever.
Below.
Good. He didn't get me and Brian singing it.
No.
That's important.
Good.
Wait, you're recording the whole show?
Yeah, we're not.
No.
Yeah, all of it gets recorded and no editing. Bad acting lady in Repo.
No, I shouldn't be here.
She's all right. Whatever.
I shouldn't be here.
Me. I mean, the whole movie's overdubbed. That's the other fun thing. Because it's music, right?
Yeah. Gotta be, yeah.
Gotta give him props, though, for some pretty good lip syncing. Nobody really screwed that up.
The apparently the new Les Mis, apparently that thing has no overdubbing. Like, what you hear... But they're like big into promoting that. Like you go to the movies and
have we not talked about this on FilmSack yet?
No,
I don't think we have.
Oh, really? they've got the most strangely compelling commercial that you see at the movies for Les Mis, where they try to convince you that it's really important that you go see it because their methods for creating the film are so unique.
I own it for the summer or the winter movie draft, so people could go see that. That'd be great. I don't even know if I'm seeing it, but yeah. I liked the last one that it wasn't a musical, and it was Liam Neeson and some other folks,
right.
And it was great.
But,
holy
but
crap,
you're
it was
in,
good.
Star Wars?
You're in Utah, where Les Mis has this strange cachet.
It does, dude. It's freaking weird. People here are weird. Genetics are a bitch.
Why are my genetics such a bitch?
Oh, guess Spy Kid. Let's settle down. So that was Pat Benatar back there.
No, it's Joan Jett.
Joan Jett, sorry.
Once again, Joan Jett.
All right. Left me in a char... I don't know what this is.
He left me in charge, sister!
Oh, he's the guy that couldn't sing, so he just
yelled. He left me in charge, sister.
He's great. He's great. Yeah. All right, here's rapping Paul Sorvino.
Ashes, dust, my children were robust.
Nice.
Wow. I like it.
That's pretty good.
Paul Sorvino, yeah, he goes Cowardly Lion one time there a couple of times, too. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
No.
He's singing that whole Cowardly Lion kind of singing.
Oh, yeah, there's some coming up. I have some coming up.
Put him up.
Here's Scott Fletcher doing a previous one.
Why, oh, why are my genetics such a bitch?
Ah, oh, so good. So good. All right, here's some bad singing.
Sorry to be so difficult.
What was that? I thought that was hilarious.
I forgot my life. Maybe if I just pretend.
All right, this one's called Bad Laugh. I really held on to that.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I don't remember who that was. It's a perfect.
Oh, it's a perfect.
Was that Luigi?
Wow. Yeah.
Did you say that?
That was Luigi. Yeah.
That's perfect.
That was his name, was Luigi?
Yeah, one of the brothers was Luigi.
Something else.
Italian.
What a waste that was.
Hold on, Mario.
Oh, yeah. What are you doing? All right. Let's try best song in the show. Oh, this is what I think is the best song in the entire show. And I only captured some of it, but I think it's the best musical moment in the show.
Zydrate comes in a little glass vial.
A little glass vial?
And the little glass vial goes into the gun like a battery. And the Zydrate gun goes somewhere against your anatomy.
That's great, dude.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's just fun.
Your anatomy? My anatomy.
Your anatomy. Yeah. Make a whole movie with him in it. And I'm liking this a lot better. You break my friggin' heart.
You break my friggin' heart.
Again, guy that couldn't sing. He's terrible. He couldn't even do a little vibrato on the end. Listen to that again.
You break my friggin' heart.
It's just kind of broken.
Yeah, he sounded like John Travolta.
I'm telling you, man, he was making Jim Carrey faces.
Seriously,
lot.
Play it again and listen for John Travolta.
You're right. Hold on.
You break my heart.
It's like that scene. I still have that, I think. Is it? That's not it. I can't find it. Is it this
that's
one?
Too bad.
No, it's not. I don't know what it is.
Scott's going to play screams.
Play all of them.
Can't find it. All right. Where are we now? Oh, he poisoned. Oh, this is great. So here's the Cowardly Lion thing you guys are talking about, all right? So here's Sorvino singing.
He's poisoned all your medicine.
That's the part you were talking about, isn't it?
It was. It was.
So weird.
So Cowardly Lion.
Didn't like it.
I feel like we're developing a face-off trope.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
This movie could have been called Face-Off, too.
Interesting.
Just with Luigi, though.
But
can you imagine how disappointed Face-Off fans would have been if you had called Face-Off too?
Not just with Luigi.
Because they'd come and take your face off if you didn't.
I mean, not just with Luigi. Sarah Brightman, the whole purpose of the character is to lose her face.
Oh, right. Well, no. You mean, you're talking about Paris Hilton's character. Sarah Brightman's character is the blind one. She's
right, you're
blind Maggie or whatever. Was it blind
Sorry.
Maggie?
How could I mistake one or the other?
Yeah, Blind Mag.
Oh, no. Don't get those two confused.
Who's Sarah Brightman? And Sarah Brightman's considered regarded, right?
She is a fantastic singer.
She's the singer in the film.
Yes. Well, and outside the film. I mean, she's
anywhere else. Career.
Yeah.
So is Paris Hilton. Oh, I'm just saying.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Scott Fletcher has a few more quotes for us. Let's try this one.
Come up and try my new parts. Go on and break them in.
We both know we want it. Shut up and try my new parts.
Maggots and
no
vermin.
Pausing helps.
This is a good one.
Maggots, vermin. You want the world for nothing.
Pretty good. Here's one that makes no sense.
He'll do your ass like dishes.
I do not know what that means.
Your ass?
Yeah, they said it earlier.
I guess that means you'll rinse it afterwards.
That's right.
Okay.
Gross.
Rub it up, baby.
You're soaking in it.
Make it soapy.
One more from him.
But those who default on their new liver or heart are subject to repossession.
Yes. Got a little Yoda in there. That's great. All right. Well, there's your stuff there. And that leads us to this. Time for a Film Sack Awards, everybody. Awards awarded to award-worthy behavior in this movie, and they go as follows. The Paul Sorvino Can't Feel Great About This All These Years Later Award. I mean, how could The Boy That Spy Kids Girl Sure Grew Up Fast Award. I almost called it the Side Boob Award, but whatever. She looks really cute in that new machete movie. Machete.
Cute isn't quite the word. Yeah, they're barely putting enough clothes on her to count as clothes.
Yeah, she's a spy woman now. Let's see. And Jinko is a stupid name award. I'm just going to give it that award because that's just true. Star Trek Connections. Paul Sorvino played Roddy Largo in this. In The Next Generation, he played Nikolai Rozhchenko, foster brother of Worf. Right. In the seventh season episode Homeward in 1993. Did they have him don a Russian accent? I don't remember.
A little bit.
Did they really?
Yeah, it was a little bit of an accent.
Because that was the whole idea, is that they were of Russian, at least they were of Russian descent. But then, you know, Picard sounds British, but he's supposed to be French. So I know there's a lot of mix up there, but
I would have. Okay, you're right. He was stepbrother. Let's call him
stepbrother. Correct. Yeah, he was the fat, ugly one born to those parents.
Worf gave his son his step-parent's last name.
We should never mention Alexander Rozhchenko. Because we hate Alexander so much.
Oh, dude, no, Alexander gets totally, comes into his own in Deep Space Nine. Although, at first, he's even worse in Deep Space Nine. Like, they start out making him, like, the worst Klingon, the littlest Klingon.
Yeah, and he shows up just to hang out with Jake.
And then he finally comes around. It takes a lot of time.
Him, Jake, and Nog causing trouble on the station. Ooh.
No, that's not, you're mistaken. All right. I'm sure you're
mistaken. I don't remember it very well. Today's soundtrack grade, I'm going to give it an R&R for ridiculous and kind of rad. There's something to like about it. I wouldn't mind getting my hands on that soundtrack and just singling out a few of the tracks.
Huge.
Yeah, 58 tracks. That's a lot. I wonder how many discs.
They're only probably like a minute long, right?
Yeah. Right.
They'll have awkward transitions. What? It's always things like, and I will bury you. What in the world is the thing? Anyway. All right. Let's get to the Twitter post. That's where you guys in 140 characters or less sum up this movie the best you can. Let's start with Randy.
Repo, the genetic opera. Like taking a poop while singing, while having an intimate conversation, while accomplishing the most memorable feat of your life, all they'll remember was that you were pooping.
Wow.
Mm. Wow.
There's wisdom in that. Dig deep and you'll find it.
Right.
Brian Brian Dunaway, go ahead.
Repo, the genetic opera. Apparently huge surgical scars are cosmetically acceptable in the future and this movie. Decaf, I will shoot you in the face.
Nice. Well done. Can't start his day without his coffee. Yeah.
I totally flubbed it.
Oh, you did fine.
Aww.
Ibbit.
Don't worry. Ibbit will flub it too.
Move on. Ibbit, we'll notice.
If that makes
Keep
you
going.
Feel better, I'll flub it too.
Yeah, go ahead.
Repo, the genetic opera. I'm not going to sing this one. A rock opera with a dystopian feel. I wouldn't try watching it while you're eating a meal. The plot details are something I can't share with a limit of 140 care.
Oh, nice. You know, there's two things great about that. The reference to the limit and that care rhymed with the other word. That is awesome. Sure. You win today.
I love you, Brian Ibbit.
Here's what I learned while you actually made Paris Hilton somewhat bearable. As in life, the grave robber is always the coolest. Movie effects in 1997 were just fine. This is the wrong movie. That's for next week.
Right.
Yep, and I'm not doing the last one either because I screwed up and put that in today's as well.
They're all the wrong thing.
For more things Scott learned while watching this film.
Like, what could Scott possibly mean when he says, the only person in this world uglier than Gary Busey is Jake Busey? All right, next week, film sex.
Okay, so we're watching a Jake Busey film.
We are.
You know what else you learned this week? That Pat Benatar and Joan Jett are very much alike in your world.
Right. Totally. I love rock and roll. Which one's that one?
That's Joan Jett.
Okay, now which one is...
And that's also Joan Jett.
Well, that's not. It's neither of them. That's
Bonnie Tyler.
Bonnie Tyler. Nah, they're all the same. Whatever.
Oh, good Lord.
They're not all the same.
No. Okay. Joaquin from Sweden. I almost said from Phoenix. Jeez, Scott. Joaquin from Sweden wrote in.
That's perfect.
This week's email. He says, hey, guys, I'm listening to the Con Air episode, and I hear you talking about diabetes and the shot Micheletti Williamson is not getting and is about to die if he doesn't get it. This is bullcrap, he says. I have diabetes and have had it since I was 4 years old, roughly 30 years. So I hope I know what I'm talking about. If you were to get in a situation where you had 2 hours to live unless you got a shot, you would need to have missed about 7 to 8 days worth of insulin. Long right. before he would die, he would fall into a coma. He would become hypoglycemic. Also, or at that point,
but still alive. Let's right. point that out.
At that point, one could hope he would have gotten medical attention. I really hope the prison system takes better care of their inmates than that. This is something that has annoyed me greatly every time I watch this movie. Just thought I'd let you know. Love the podcast. Keep up the awesome work, Joaquim from Sweden. Just
either that,
yeah,
or either that or Bubba is being way over dramatic.
Yeah.
Just a reminder that Jerry Bruckheimer is full of shit.
Insulin shrimp. I hope everyone enjoyed that last week. We had a ball doing it.
Yes, so much. It was a blast.
Let's talk about our next film. And this now this Jake Busey reference will make sense. We are watching Starship Troopers. Starship Troopers, 1997's sci-fi behemoth thing by Paul Verhoeven, which I think is our third Verhoeven movie.
Wow.
Written by the same guys that wrote or same dude that wrote RoboCop, so and there's a lot of similarities, I believe.
Yeah.
Anyway, this will be a lot of fun to get into, so we're totally stoked about that. Starship Troopers, and that is streaming, so if you couldn't see Repo because it's this, you know, strange disc and this is the only way you're hearing about it.
This strange disc.
No problem on Starship Troopers. It's freaking everywhere. And the Netflix streaming quality on that movie, I got to say, pretty awesome. Looked real good. Check that out next week. Starship Troopers. That's it. What do we have after that? I don't even know. We won't even say. What do we have after that? Do we know?
Oh, after Starship Troopers?
Yeah.
We're going to watch
Everybody
Idiocracy.
Has so much trouble saying Starship Troopers.
Oh, that's right. Idiocracy, that's right.
I had no problem saying it. Starship Troopers.
Starship.
We're going to watch. I love our upcoming films list. I'm just going to name some of them.
Go ahead.
Our next two films after Starship Troopers are Idiocracy and Independence Day. We're also watching Beverly Hills Cop 3. We're watching Deep Impact. We're going to watch The Toxic Avenger and The Double Dragon and The Point Blank. That's Point Blank.
Not Point Break.
Not Gross Break.
Trust me, we'd watch Point Break in a heartbeat if it was streaming somewhere. and we will eventually, but yeah, that's not on the list yet. But an awesome selection coming up. So stay tuned for all of that, folks. In the meantime, if you would do the honor, or please do the thing that I'd ask you to do, which is to go to the website, filmsack.com. You will find therein references to everything we talk about, including episodes and show notes and everything else, and links to our forums. Go there, filmsack.com. You can also email us, filmsack@gmail.com, and find us on Twitter, @filmsack. If you'd leave us a review on iTunes, we'd sure appreciate that as well. That is going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
That's me.
We'll see you next time.
Somebody sing us out.
Sing. Scott Johnson needs to sing.
The end.
Surgery.
My left nut.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there!